All our progress has ended in new persecution, new repression, new suffering. The officials told our padres to abandon God and the gospel of his love. But they not only refused to apostatize, they asked to be tortured, so they could demonstrate the strength of their faith and the presence of God within them.
This is a film that's quite difficult in some ways, if one knows the history of the Jesuits around the world, and yet it's a very personal, poignant story about personal faith.
It's a very personal story, and very, very personal to Martin Scorsese. He was handed the book by a New York Protestant bishop in the early 70s, and it just got under his skin because I think it was the main character, Father Rodriguez, has to ultimately confront his id, his inner self, knock down his ego, which has already been knocked down by the cruelty of the Japanese system and the hostility of the land and privations he's had to go through, that he confronts this incredibly doubtful man. I.e. the big questions, is there a God? What's our reason for being on this planet? You know, and I think Martin was going through that when he was given this book.
Ferreira is lost to us. He apostatized. That he denounced God in public and surrendered the faith. And is now living as a Japanese.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan. We're here today because of him.
He's the strongest of us.
The whole film is driven by this total faith that the young priests have in you and whether you've betrayed them. It's a terrible burden, both as a character, but I was also wondering as an actor, how heavy was it to play that role?
When we shot the scene when Andrew eventually sees me, when I come in dressed in a kimono, I remember thinking, I should have prepared for this so much more. Then I thought, well, no, Martin Scorsese is shooting this in such a way. He's investing me with power, you know what I mean? I just have to be me, essentially. Say these words that Jay Cox and he have spent 20 years in writing. I said, just trust that. The mystery of who this character was and maybe the power of who he was will hopefully come across.
It's interesting how often you've played a god-like figure, whether it's this mentor to those young priests in silence, or it's Aslan, who is a kind of metaphor for Jesus. I don't think you've ever really played evil, or very rarely. I gather that Ralph Fiennes is a good friend of yours, and he's often played evil, and he told me quite recently that when he plays it, it has to come from within him. You often play something very different, a good man tormented by doubts. Does that come from within you?
Probably. I mean, I think actors on film, we all have an aura. And you can be the best actor in the world and change your nose and wear a false beard and make yourself totally unrecognizable, but you still have an aura that you can't change. That's not to say, mind you, that Rafe's aura is absolutely evil, you know, but I seem to have an aura of stand-up good, you know, but I'd like to play evil.
Would you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You do anguish very well.
I do anguish, yeah, I do anguish quite well. Confusion quite well, too.
You grew up Catholic in Northern Ireland, but I gather you used to sneak into Ian Paisley's church to watch him preach. What effect did that have on you becoming an actor?
I did a couple of times sneak in to hear Ian Paisley preach, and he was hellfire and damnation. I mean, what an orator. He was scarily good, and he was a big man, you know. And it was like old-time religion time, you know what I mean? I saw great performances. I didn't cow down and think, oh my gosh, I'm going to burn in hell or any of that stuff, but I saw a great actor performing. It encouraged me, it certainly did, and I was able to tell him that quite a few years ago. He and Martin McGuinness came over to sponsor and promote Northern Ireland. He called over to his wife, Eileen, come here, do you hear that? Tell her what you've just told me. So he was like, he was quite chuffed, you know.
Can I ask about A Monster Calls? There's something Aslan-like about that character. There's something godlike about the way he engages with that boy, helping him make sense of the senselessness of losing a parent.
Now, I've come to tell you the second tale.
Is it as bad as the last one?
It ends with proper destruction, if that's what you mean. A man who gets punished very badly indeed.
Stories aren't real, though. They don't help anything.
Stories are wild creatures, Connor O'Malley. When you let them loose, who knows what havoc they may wreak. Oh, yes.
Okay. Go on, then.
There is an incredible intimacy in this relationship, even though it relies in the finished film on so much CGI.
We shot in this little studio before they started principal photography, Lewis, myself, and the director, and it was a motion capture studio. You're in a space that the computer nerds call the volume. It's a circular area where there are 70 cameras in a circle on the ground and 70 cameras above your head too, so it captures everything you do from every angle. You're in a kind of a onesie, tight-fitting suit with ping pong balls attached to your extremities, which are sensors, which are then connected to these four or five computer geeks on computers who are adding digital makeup to your body. I did all my scenes with Lewis. Lewis was off camera, emoting all the time. I mean, he was extraordinary, this kid. Oh, wonderful.
I read that you said you had worked with children in the past on films in general who somehow lost their innocence because of their experience in the cinema industry. It sounded like it was important to you a screen child or grandchild would be protected, and that's what you feel happened in this case.
Yes, and just given Lewis's natural talent, he had only done, I think, one film. So he was 12. So he hadn't learned any tricks or any of that stuff, you know. I've worked quite a few times with kids, and sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you would see a little performance, you know what I mean? You say, oh, here we go, that's so false. And, but he or she has been trained by the acting coach to kind of pull this face or do this. But with Lewis, it was such a bare, very emotion-filled performance.
It's quite raw to watch. People will inevitably watch this film, think about the subject matter and think about you taking on a role in it, because it is about, you know, family bereavement.
You know, I didn't consciously think about it. You accrue a life experience and hopefully it comes across in your performances in some way, you know, without it being italicized or anything. It's a dark subject, but I've been in pains to say it's an incredibly entertaining film too, you know. There's humor in it. There's parts of it are sort of action thriller-ish.
You mentioned it is something of an action thriller, and inevitably one has to say, you have become a cult action hero later in life than perhaps you might have thought when you started out as a screen actor. And there's a whole generation of teenagers out there, you must know, who love your Taken films. How does that feel?
Look, I'll be honest, I love doing the fighting in these movies. I feel like a kid in a toy shop when I do these things. So I'll give it maybe another 2 years.
And then
I think audiences will be going, oh, come on, you got to be kidding me, you know. Where's your Zimmer frame?